I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Good morning and welcome to a hot edition of Eco Talk. Hot because we have global warming on our minds again today, or as we're more accurately being told to call it, climate disruption. Now, this topic, of course, was supposed to be acted upon at the disrupted G8 summit, but there was not much action on imposing any curbs in greenhouse gas emissions. However, we probably cannot blame that on the terrorist attacks. W was, of course, committed to not budging in his unwillingness to go along with any agreement to reduce CO2 emissions. And as for the consequences of that inaction and some analysis, we'll turn first to Mark Hertzgard, an environmental correspondent for The Nation and author of several books, including Earth Odyssey: Around the World in Search of Our Environmental Future. After that, we'll turn our attention to what cities are doing to combat climate change, since the federal government is dropping the big ball. We'll speak with Seattle Mayor Greg Nickels from the Sundance Summit. He's been kind of the Pied Piper of a grassroots effort to get communities to do what the national government will not. And we'll also talk with the organizer of that conference in Utah this week. And in our last segment, we'll take a look back at the late, great Gaylord Nelson, of course, the father of Earth Day and the modern environmental movement, many folks say. But first, Mark Hertzgard, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
You wrote a great article before the G8 called The Bad Climate Deal Blair and Bush May Push in Scotland. In fact, what happened? What didn't happen?
Mr. Blair, of course, wanted to have ambitious action at the G8 summit on climate change, along with poverty in Africa. Climate change was the prime focus of the summit. Blair's science advisor had called climate change the most serious problem facing humanity in 5,000 years of civilization. And Blair has always said that Kyoto, quite accurately, has said Kyoto is not radical enough. We need 10 times the emission reductions that Kyoto foresees, and so he was pushing for this kind of a historic breakthrough, really, at the G8 summit in Scotland. And as you mentioned, the big obstacle to that was George W. Bush. Bush has said repeatedly that he's not willing to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. He was quoted saying right before the summit that the Kyoto Protocol, quote, would have wrecked the U.S. economy, unquote. And so at the end of the day at the summit, there was a statement about climate change that was really pretty empty. It said that the leaders are going to talk about a new dialogue on climate change, and they stated that global warming, quote, is a serious long-term challenge, unquote, for the planet. But they very specifically declined to endorse any new timetables or targets for emissions.
So is this about what you would expect, or even worse, perhaps because of the terrorist interruption?
I don't think the terrorist interruptions had anything to do with it, as tragic as those were. This was a deal that was basically blocked really weeks in advance of the summit. We know because the negotiating texts were leaked to papers, newspapers in Great Britain, and they showed essentially that the original drafts that the Blair administration was putting forward, the Blair government, called for strict timetables, pretty ambitious emissions cuts. And those specifications were taken out at the insistence of U.S. negotiators.
Well, I mean, was there any showdown ever between Blair and Bush? I've been trying to read between the lines in terms of what happened, what didn't happen there. Do you have any inside track on if it ever came to that moment we were all hoping for, where Blair would just give Bush a tongue-lashing?
We don't know about that. At least publicly, it's uncertain. We do know that Mr. Blair came to Washington about a month before the G8 summit to talk to Mr. Bush, and afterwards, in their joint press conference, they essentially disagreed about climate change, Blair sticking with his position and Bush saying that you know, we think climate change is important, but our U.S. economic growth comes first.
Yeah, right. So he talks about, you know, this could wreck the economy. Kyoto, what about wrecking the future of the planet, which is not too much an exaggeration, according to your article?
No, the scientists are increasingly clear about this, that climate change is, you know, as Sir David King, Blair's science advisor, says, it could be the single greatest threat to human civilization of the last 5,000 years. You're going to see in the, if nothing else is done, you're going to see in the 21st century, literally millions of people are going to die from climate change because of rising sea levels, are going to flood coastlines and cities. You're going to have a terrible mega droughts, which will then lead to mass starvation, enormous refugee flows, and on and on. Right before the G8 summit, the National Academies of Science from 10 major nations, including, I might add, the United States National Academy of Science, issued a joint statement saying that the time for action is now. This is a very urgent problem, and there's no time for further delay. And everybody else among the G8 nations, except for the United States, were ready to go on this. So once again, it's the Bush administration as the odd man out.
And it's interesting to note, in addition to Bush's, quote, this will wreck the economy, quote, he also, in not being willing to sign on to Kyoto, said repeatedly, well, China and India are not doing enough. If I'm not mistaken, China and India were there, even though they're not part of the G8 technically, and they were ready to take some action, but because Bush didn't, they didn't. Is that correct?
Well, it's correct that China and India were there. Blair tried to anticipate that objection on the part of President Bush, and he invited China. These are China, India, and also Brazil, Mexico, and South Africa as five major emerging industrial nations. And, you know, it is very true that we as a species, as a civilization, we cannot deal with climate change without taking account of China, India, etc. And so the idea on Blair's part was to get them there at, in Scotland and say to Bush, let's have a grand agreement here that the industrial nations go first. The industrial nations have the money. The industrial nations have created the problem with their historic emissions. But going forward, we absolutely need cooperation from the Chinas and Indias of the world. But when there was no forward movement in Scotland, the leaders of both China and India rather strongly denounced that failure and said, don't expect us to sacrifice our economic growth coming out of poverty when you in the wealthy North aren't willing to even take the really tiny steps that Kyoto requires.
So it's not really an exaggeration to say George W. Bush is standing in the way of progress.
I would say not just standing in the way of progress, but standing in the way of human survival in the 21st century. It is still has not sunk in yet to people just how dangerous climate change is. And I would add, there, Betsy, that it has not sunk into most of our colleagues in the news media. If you look at the coverage of the Glen Eagles G8 summit, quite rightly there was an enormous amount of attention on the African poverty theme. Nowhere near as much attention to climate change in the news coverage. And that's very odd because you will not all that $50 billion that the G8 leaders pledged for African poverty, the effects of that will be wiped out if we don't deal with climate change. Africa will be by far the continent that will suffer the most from climate change. Their agricultural sector will be devastated by those droughts to a far greater extent than $50 billion in aid from the West can make up for. So it's a really a tragic missed opportunity, not just by the politicians, but also by the news media for failing to connect these dots.
I saw you recently, Mark, at the George Lucas opening in the Presidio, and I saw that you have a new baby girl. Congratulations.
Thank you.
My baby girl somehow became 10 and a half when I blinked while I was out saving the planet. She grew up, and I, as a parent, and I'm sure you feel this too, am outraged. I mean, this man is harming our daughter's future, and you can imagine how other parents listening to this might feel. Can we sue him?
It's very interesting you mentioned lawsuits. There's a lawsuit that's underway now that could very well become the greenhouse equivalent of the tobacco industry litigation. There's a number of states, including our state here in California, that are suing the five biggest electric utilities in the United States for causing grievous harm under the Public Nuisance Act. And we'll see, and I believe a preliminary ruling is due in September on that lawsuit. We'll see. If that comes through, that could really be a major shift, a major leverage point in getting corporations to shift on this. I think, frankly, you can't sue President Bush, and it's really too late with Bush. I argue in my article in The Nation that what the G8 summit should do is to go ahead without Bush. Tony Blair says, well, you can't make progress on climate change without the United States of America, which is true. But Mr. Blair is in error when he assumes that the United States is the same as the Bush administration. There's big parts of the United States and you're going to talk to some of the mayors later in your program, states like California, who have already begun to embrace and go beyond what Kyoto calls for in terms of climate change preparations and emissions reductions. And that is where I think the future on this is going to be. If the G8 hooked up with California and New York and Massachusetts and these other states, that's more than half the GNP of the country already. And, you know, leave Bush behind. We can't wait for Godot.
Leave the dinosaur in the dust. Thanks, Mark Hertzgard, for joining us. You're listening to Air America Radio. And EcoTalk will be right back.